When your air conditioner quits, you need it fixed. Fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of Care Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win a BBB Torch Award for ethics and be recognized as Lennox's Partner of the Year in 2024. So call Care Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, as you may know, Alan Turing was one of the parents of modern computing, played a huge role in code breaking during World War II, and in part thanks to his portrayal by Benedict Cumberbatch in The Imitation Game, he's generally thought of as a socially awkward nerd. But Sarah Dillon, a professor of literature at Cambridge, argues that it was far more interesting than that. Sarah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Now, a lot of this is to do with a short story that Turing wrote. In what period of his life did he write this story?
He wrote it sometime after he'd been arrested and convicted for the crime that was called gross indecency in those days. So probably at least the end of 1952, sometime between then and his death in 1954.
Okay, and he'd undergone chemical castration at this point.
Yeah, that was his only option, in inverted commas, to go into jail. So he rightly chose, he thought that was the better deal. So he was on that for a year from the kind of summer of 1952 to 1953. He did then live a very full life for another year. There's a kind of conflation of the end of his life where you get the, you know, arrested, convicted, on the therapy, dies. And actually there was a year where he wasn't on the therapy, where he was going on holiday and having fun and carrying on with his work. So we forget about that end of his life, I think.
Yeah, because yes, you would have thought after the conviction that for his remaining days he'd be quite depressed, but the story seems to contain a large amount of jolliness in it.
Yeah, it's a fun, kind of slightly cheeky, a bit risque in places story of gay cruising and a pickup. And his character in there, we can say it's auto-fictional, which means it's a fictional character, but it very closely maps onto Turing. Says at one point that, you know, he's proud of his homosexuality and even likes to parade it in certain environments.
Now, it's called Price's Boy, though boy is spelled B-U-O-Y. I assume there's some sort of pun in there.
Yes, so it's that bit of the story. So it's not technically called Price's Boy. Turing didn't call it anything, but it's kind of come to be known as Price's Boy because that's the nice moment in the story, which obviously doesn't work very well on the radio, but works very well on the page, where he likes he's very proud of an invention called Price's Boy, and that invention is of course Turing coming up with the idea of computers when he was only in his 20s. And the character says that, you know, sometimes he likes in certain company to pretend that it doesn't have the U in it. So he also likes to think about his boys in that sense.
Yeah. And so what is the action in the story?
So it starts with Alec, the interplanetary scientist. He's just been working on a paper on interplanetary travel. He's worked really hard. He sent it off. He's done his Christmas shopping and he decides he deserves a treat. So he goes looking for a young man and he knows in Manchester where to go to pick one up. And then we shift into the mind of Ron, who is this working class young man. He's broke. He's looking to make some money. He spots Alec cruising around the park. And then we kind of go backwards and forwards in the story between Ron's mind and Alec's mind. They're kind of figuring each other out. Is this safe? Because, of course, you know, it could be an undercover policeman. You're going to be in real trouble if you pick up the wrong guy at that point in time. And eventually Alec sticks down. They figure out that they're both after the same thing, although Ron's after it for profit and Alec is after it for pleasure. And they set off to a restaurant. Then it ends mid-sentence at the bottom on the right-hand side of a page, ends with Ron wouldn't. And we don't know what Ron wouldn't do because we don't have the rest of the pages. But I think it strongly implies that there was more. It just didn't make it into the archive and down to posterity.
Oh, that's so... intriguing.
Frustrating, isn't it?
Do you get the sense that you were 3/4 way through the story, 7/8 way through the story, that it was coming to the end?
No, I think it was just getting going. I mean, what we've got is 600 pages. It's just over 1,000 words. Okay, maybe we could have been a third through. I mean, it depends, doesn't it? Short stories can be very, very short or almost a novella. And I'm saying it's a short story because he said in a letter to his friend just after he was arrested, you know, I've got this thing to tell you that's happened to me. I can't put it all in a letter, but I'll make it into a short story one day. So I'm assuming that what we've got was him doing that. But of course, maybe it was the beginning of a novel.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. Well, had he written any fiction before that?
Not that we know of. Andrew Hodges, who is really the reason we know anything about Turing, who wrote this phenomenal kind of 700-page biography of Turing that was published in the early 80s, he interviewed Arnold Murray, who was the young lad that Turing was convicted with. And Arnold Murray told him a story about Turing making up a kind of short little story on the spot when they were spending time together about getting trapped in an RAF hangar down the road from his house in Winslow. And the RAF hangar was actually a big sort of supermind computer, and Turing having to trick it in order to escape. So he obviously was kind of playing with his imagination at that point. And some of his letters are quite funny. He writes to one mate that he's going to try and scupper his trip to Austria by making up lies about him that he's going to tell to the Austrian authorities, that he's actually being exported to satisfy the lust of an Italian countess. So, and he says at the end of that letter, "Oh, was the beginning of this letter whimsical or what?" So he's really having fun kind of letting his imagination go. But this is the only really kind of solid written example we've got of him doing creative writing. He also read and went to the theatre throughout his life. So it isn't this kind of massive surprise that he suddenly decided to write. He was reading gay fiction. He read Angus Wilson's Hemlock and After, which is an amazing gay novel published July that year. And actually, the source passage for the story is in that novel. So he was also kind of copying the literature that he was reading. He was trying out creative writing as a way of starting to understand who this new post-arrest midlife man was.
So in a way, and as you say, it was autofiction, but it was perhaps part of that process. I'm free of those shackles now. I'm free of perhaps having repressed a part of myself. So what am I like? And he was trying to figure that out on the page.
No, I think Turing knew exactly who he was and had done for his entire life. I don't think there's any sense that Turing was repressed or ashamed of his homosexuality. It was part of who he was. He explored it on. He used to go on holiday to the continent, where and many gay men in the mid-century did, where it wasn't illegal, so you could go and have fun. He has playful exchanges with a good friend of his who also wrote a gay autofiction, but in the early 1940s, called Fred Clayton, who was much less explicit about where he was on the kind of sexuality spectrum. But they have funny exchanges where Turing teases him about inviting him up to stay with him, and I've only got a double bed, but I assure you it's quite safe. So, you know, he was out with his close friends. He was a practicing homosexual. Maybe finally getting arrested. I guess once you've been arrested and convicted, that fear of the law, I don't know, maybe it gets greater, or maybe you're like, well, you know, I've already been arrested, so I might as well just carry on.
Yeah,
I mean, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I know, just that he felt there was nothing to lose now because they'd already taken that from him. Do you think the people he worked with prior to that knew he was gay, or some of them knew he was gay?
I think some of them did. I actually had a wonderful email in response to all this coverage from someone whose dad was friends with Turing. And he said that Turing used to come to their house and chat about philosophy and politics, and that his dad didn't know he was gay. So there's obviously some people he shared it with and some people he didn't. But that's also probably quite normal. There's bits of ourselves we share with some friends and don't share with others, don't we? So I don't think the fact that everybody didn't know is indicative of some kind of you know, repression.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Sarah, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Sarah Dillon, Professor of Literature at Cambridge.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.